Live from the underground caves in Dingle County, Kerry, Ireland, with a population of 1,671. He is an Irish-American who is brash, outspoken, and sometimes a jackass. But he has a heart of gold. Only if you're nice to him. The Loudmouth Leprechaun podcast starts now. Right after he finishes his lucky charms.
It's here. The Loudmouth Leprechaun podcast is here. Episode 1. It is Tuesday, August 20th, 2024. Inaugural episode of the Loudmouth Leprechaun podcast. This starts my first series of episodes, mostly focusing on the 2024 college football preview. This episode, along with the next three or four episodes, will be focused on college football. And like I mentioned in episode 0, I am a sports fanatic, but this show in general is going to be a little bit more wide open. Yes, it's going to be sports related mostly, but I'll be talking government. I'll be talking about entertainment. I'll be talking about a lot of different things. I appreciate everyone tuning in to this episode. College football is right around the corner, and boy, do I love it. I know baseball is wrapping up. All the pennant races are getting closer and closer. So I know some of Braves fans out there are thinking, oh, our season's done. We're just going to get a wild card. It's not over till the fat lady sings, ladies and gentlemen. It hasn't sung yet. So I still have faith in our Atlanta Braves to do well. If they just get a wild card, so be it. If they win another NL East title, that would be great too. Please go check out my social media pages. Twitter, LML Podcast 1984. Instagram, LML Podcast 84. Send me an email at lmlpodcast1984@gmail.com with your questions, concerns, suggestions on upcoming shows. What do you want me to talk about? I'd be glad to talk about it. This first segment of the Loudmouth Leprechaun podcast is sponsored by Bradstorm VO. Did you like the introduction to the show? Bradstorm VO did that for me. And I said last week on episode 0, he is just a phenomenal person, a great friend of mine, does excellent work. Everyone, please go check him out on social media for all of your voiceover needs as well. He does companies, he does podcast stuff. He's just amazing. And I recommend him to anybody that needs some voiceover work done. What is worse for college football? The transfer portal or the NIL money? First things first, I want to talk about the transfer portal real quick. My first big thing about the transfer portal is high school recruiting will become a joke because loyalty to teams will decrease. For example, let's just say you're an Alabama fan. You see the top 10 upcoming recruits for the 2025 class. Say you have three of them. You have the top quarterback, top defensive end, and a top wide receiver, all right? Coming to Tuscaloosa to play for the Crimson Tide. A week or so before signing day, two of them leave and go elsewhere. And I know it's a natural environment of college football to do that, but wouldn't you be pissed off that your team could not hold on to those recruits? Being a Notre Dame fan, we have luck of the Irish with us to have that ability, and say two or even all three of them decide to go elsewhere, I would be pissed. I would say, geez, our recruiting coordinator sucks, or Marcus Freeman is not doing his job, or the coaches aren't doing their job to keep the recruits. That's a big and huge thing. And these recruits, I'm going to talk about it later with for a bigger example when I talk about my surprise teams for the upcoming 2024 football season. But that's a huge deal in college football. These high school players don't have the loyalty to their first program. And I know 10, 15 years ago, you sign with somebody, you're going to stick with them through and through. If that's the case now, don't sign with anybody early. That's my whole gripe about that, all right? I don't like the transfer portal for that specific reason, because if you sign with a team, say you sign with Alabama, and you're not getting any playing time, then you want to go to a school like Memphis, or you want to go to a school like App State, or you want to go to a school like Kennesaw State. Yeah, you won't get the NIL money that you would get at Alabama, but you get the playing time. And some people are like that, and trust me, I'll get more on that here in a second as well. The other thing I want to talk about when it comes to the transfer portal in college football is they need to limit the amount of transfers a player can do. Prime example of this, and I know Georgia fans are going to freaking hate me when I say this, JT Daniels. This guy committed to play at Southern Cal, played there 2018-2019. Then he transferred to UGA in 2020 and 2021. Then he transferred to West Virginia in 2022 and then transferred to Rice University in 2023. He retired this past December. I think this is funny because he retired in 2023 because of concussion issues. No, you retired because you suck balls. You lost to basically a backup at USC. You lost to Stenson Bennett at UGA. And we all know what happened with the UGA that year when Benton took over. They won the national championship. As much as it pains me to say that, West Virginia you came to, you were horrible at West Virginia, and you were horrible at Rice. Well, let me rephrase it. You were decent at Rice, but you're playing against competition that are a bunch of subpar teams. He was averaging 1,500 yards per season, 10 touchdowns and 5 interceptions in 6 years playing college football. I just don't understand why these players are getting to transfer not one time, not two times, but on average 3 times to 3 different teams. And I understand NIL money is a part of it, but they need a limited amount, all right? And you can't tell me, God forbid, a player's parents pass away and then they have to go live with their grandparents. They have to go transfer to a school in that state. I understand that. There are certain situations that I probably agree with, but just to say, oh, I'm not getting playing time. Let me try to go get playing time at another school. Oh, I'm a backup at that school too. Oh, I suck balls. So why don't you stay focused with the program and bust your ass and try to get on the field instead of transferring here and transferring here and transferring here and transferring here. They need to limit the amount of transfers. And I don't know what that number is. Would I like to say that that number would only be 1 transfer per cycle? Yes, but I don't know. I hate that concept of being able to transfer 2, 3, even 4 times for one player. That's ridiculous. Going on to NIL. I've always been against NIL in collegiate football and collegiate sports in general. Why? Because they're getting a free education. And this is coming from somebody that's mother was a teacher, understood the value of education. My parents raised me really well and said education is the first thing. Extracurricular activities was second priority. I want to talk about a story. I hope I don't get any bad feedback on this. My family knew David Green, the former UGA quarterback that got drafted by the Seattle Seahawks and then went to Kansas City, then went to New England in that order, I believe. My mom was a gifted teacher at the elementary school that me and my brother attended and actually tested David Green to be in the gifted program. Well, he didn't get into the gifted program. I'm not saying that to be harsh, all right? I didn't get tested at all because, let's face it, in grade school, I was a dumbass. I'll be the first to admit that. Who in their right mind would at least say that in elementary school they were a dumbass? I was a dumbass, ladies and gentlemen, all right? I'm no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But going back to my story, he got tested for the gifted program, didn't get into the gifted program. But yet, just because he could throw a football and he was a phenomenal athlete, 2-sport athletes, baseball, football, loved the family to death. Met him a few times as an adult. Great guy. Really enjoyed watching him play at UGA. The only reason I rooted for UGA at all was when David Green was a quarterback at UGA, all right? I saw him play in high school and phenomenal athlete at South Gwinnett High School as well, where we attended. Point is that David Green, just because he could throw a football, he went to UGA. He would have never gotten in UGA at all if he couldn't throw a football. That's the only reason he got in UGA, all right? If it was strictly about getting in on your academics, he would have never gotten in. But he got into UGA, and nothing against him. He is doing phenomenal now at his profession. He's a class act. I adore him. But it's also one of those things, too, where David Green got basically a free ride. Another thing about the NIL money that I really want to talk about is it's green money. Perfect example about this is that there's a 2025 recruit by the name of Deuce Knight. Quarterback, 4-star recruit, just got upgraded to a 5-star recruit by numerous recruiting websites out there. He committed to Notre Dame already. And there's talks now about him potentially decommitting to Notre Dame and going to Auburn. I think he's a native of Mississippi, I do believe. Here's the funny thing about Deuce Knight. And I want Deuce Knight at Notre Dame. I think he's a phenomenal player. But you're telling me that Auburn is offering more money, and granted, it's in the SEC, I understand that. You're telling me that they're offering more NIL money to go to Auburn than you have already going to get when you're going to be playing at Notre Dame. No, I'm sorry. I respect Auburn's program a lot more than I do a lot of the SEC programs. But you're telling me that Auburn has more NIL money to give Deuce Knight than Notre Dame? name, you're out of your effing mind, all right? And it's not just Deuce Knight, it's everybody that's doing it. And it's the colleges and universities that are being greedy about this. The players are being greedy about this. What's the old saying? Go to the school that you really want to go to. If I was one of these players today and I was this gifted and I knew from birth that I wanted to go to wherever, I would commit to that school full-fledged, regardless of the money situation. I'm still against NIL money. But if you are going to that school, then you need to be fully committed to that school as well, in my opinion. The last thing about the NIL money that I really want to talk about is backup quarterbacks at Power 5 conferences schools versus a starter at the mid-major comparison. And this is something I still don't like, all right? You're starting quarterback at the University of Alabama. You have a backup, just like most schools do. That backup doesn't get a lot of playing time. He's thinking to himself, oh, I can go to App State, or I can go to Georgia Southern and start immediately for their program. Yeah, you can, but the NIL money is going to be a lot less. You might be a starter at a school in the Sun Belt Conference, but I guarantee you're making a lot more money at Alabama or a Power 5 school than you would be doing being a starter at mid-major school like Georgia Southern or App State or whatnot in a smaller conference. If I was an athlete and I was in that situation, I would go ahead and stay. Shoot, I'd be making more money there. I would much rather stay there, and if, God forbid, something happens to the starting quarterback, I'm playing against Auburn. I'm playing against Georgia. I'm playing against Texas. If I do well, then my NFL draft stock is going up. Where, let me transfer to Georgia Southern and whatnot, have a phenomenal year that people aren't paying attention to me, because with all due respect, Georgia Southern football's not on TV as much as the Alabamas and the Auburns and the Kentuckys of the world. In retrospect, what do I think is worse for college football, the transfer portal or the NIL? I think the NIL is a lot worse for college football than the transfer portal, because I believe that athletes shouldn't get paid. I think they're getting a free ride with their education, and I understand that athletes are full-fledged into their sport of choice, whether it's football, baseball, basketball, whatnot, but there needs to be limitations. And I know they're full-fledged into their sports and they can't work and they can't make money. I know some of these families are not as wealthy, and I understand that they might want to coexist, but NIL is a lot worse for college football than the transfer portal. Coming up in the next segment, I'm going to get into some top storylines for the 2024 college football season, as well as casual fans versus diehard fans. You're listening to the Loudmouth Leprechaun Podcast on Podbean.com.
If you have diabetes and you're on Medicare, you may qualify for a free meter from Liberty Medical. If you have type 2 diabetes like I have, you're confronted with choices. You can choose to feel sorry for yourself. I hope you don't. I hope you choose to get involved with a good doctor. Find out some things about diabetes and your own body in the bargain. You'll learn to check your own blood sugar and check it often. That, along with a simple diet and exercise program, can help keep your diabetes under control. If you're on Medicare, call Liberty Medical. We'll help you keep your diabetes under control. First, we'll give you a free meter. No one is more serious than Liberty about helping you keep your diabetes under control. That's why we're a proud sponsor of the American Diabetes Association in their mission to prevent and cure diabetes.
Call for your free meter and ADA offer. Call 1-800-816-8052.
Welcome back, listeners, to the Loudmouth Leprechaun Podcast right here on Podbean.com. My college football 2024 preview gets you ready for the college football season. It's going to be an unbelievable time for everybody. Please go follow my social media pages, LML Podcast 1984 on Twitter, LML Podcast 84 on Instagram. Also, send me your questions, comments, suggestions at LMLPodcast1984@gmail.com. This segment of the Loudmouth Leprechaun Podcast is sponsored by the Wounded Warrior Project of Atlanta. Yes, I know the Democrats are more worried about the illegal immigrants coming in and not as much involvement with our Wounded Warriors, but that shouldn't stop us, guys. There's a lot of veterans out there of war that needs our help, need our support. I'm one of those guys that I just love our military, regardless of what the liberals say. So please go visit them at woundedwarriorproject.org and go check out out how you can donate today to that wonderful cause. I've been just a big supporter of the Wounded Warrior Project for as long as I can remember. I respect the men and women in our armed services, unlike Harris and Walls, who are a bunch of fucking idiots. Please go support WoundedWarriorProject.org as well and donate. I really want to talk about a few things on this segment two of the Loud Mouth Leprechaun podcast. The first one is I want to talk about the difference between casual college football fans and diehard college football fans. I've been talking to numerous coworkers, numerous classmates for years about this topic. First things first, you gotta know the knowledge of your team. And I don't mind you being a fan of Auburn or a fan of UCLA or a fan of USC. That's fine. You can root for your team and be proud of you being a fan. But please, please know your team inside and out. That's the difference between a casual fan and a diehard fan. A diehard fan should know more than the starting quarterback and the starting running back and the star linebacker and the head coach. These diehard fans know every position, know what high school, know a lot more about them. I've always considered myself a diehard Notre Dame fan. I know the team inside and out. I listen, I read stuff on the internet about my team, and I've been that way since I can remember, all right? I picked a team at a very young age, and I stuck to it. I don't mind casual fans, but don't tell me that you're a diehard fan and say, oh, I know so-and-so, he's my quarterback. I know so-and-so because he's my running back. Name me your offensive line. Name me your backup defensive tackle. Know your team. That just drives me insane. I've had coworkers in the past or classmates go, oh, I'm a diehard Auburn fan. Okay, tell me their backup quarterback. Oh, I don't know that. I know their starting quarterback. Okay, that's fine, and that's good and all, but you need to know your team inside and out to be a diehard fan. You can be a casual fan. I know a lot of people, family members that are casual Georgia fans and know just a little bit about the team. That's fine with me. I'm not talking negatively about that, but I'm also talking about if you consider yourself a diehard fan of a team, but you need to be a knowledgeable individual on that team to be a diehard fan. Another difference between casual fans and diehard fans I want to get to. Diehard fans don't miss a game at all. And I know the last few years I miss games live, but that's a thing that I like to call on demand, or a thing called DVR it, watch it later. I know it's hard, especially with social media the way it is and being tempted to check out your social media and getting recaps and what's going on and everything, but I never do that. If I have to miss a game for whatever reason, whether it's a nephew's soccer game or my niece's softball game, I record the game, I come home and watch it. It might be on delay, obviously an hour, hour and a half. And when I get caught up, then okay, I'll get caught up and I'll check my social media. But diehard fans watch the games, they don't miss a game. Casual fans are the ones who are like, oh, I'll watch 10, 15 minutes of it, go do something, come back 15, 20 minutes, do something, halftime, do something, come back 15 minutes later. It's just a catch 22. I mean, that's the big difference for me. Diehard fans tend to watch every second of every game, where casual fans watch maybe an hour total of the game. So the last thing that I want to say about this is the more than one method. And I had a dear friend of mine in high school. His name is Trevin. Good friend of mine. I adore him to death. But our friendly discussions about which teams are the best. And I've always been a Notre Dame football fan. And my second team, if you have to mention it in college football, would be Duke. My dad's a Duke grad. I watch Duke basketball more than I do Notre Dame basketball, to be fair. I'm a diehard Duke basketball fan, and I'm a casual Notre Dame basketball fan. If that makes any sense to you, vice versa with football. Diehard Notre Dame fan, casual Duke football fan. It's okay to have more than one team that you root for. I don't mind that. But it's also one of those things, too, where you have to even out the playing field. And two teams is fine with me. As soon as you get outside of the second team, I want to question your loyalty to a certain fan base. Trevin's situation was, grew up being a Maryland fan, and I fully understand that. He liked the early 2000s basketballs with Juan Dixon, Lonnie Baxter, Dee Francis, and all those guys, and all of them are phenomenal college basketball players. He was a big Michael Jordan fan too, so he's definitely a diehard North Carolina basketball fan. He knows North Carolina basketball inside and out. We always have our friendly rivalry every year with the North Carolina Duke game ever since I can remember. And he's a Florida State fan. He was a big FSU fan. I believe he was a big Deion Sanders, Pierre Warwick, Jameis Winston fans as well. So, you know, we always have that Florida State, Notre Dame football rivalry as well. I just don't like the concept of people having more than two teams. You can switch them out. don't, like I said with my Notre Dame and Duke thing, you have Duke for basketball as your diehard team, you have your Notre Dame diehard football, and then you just reverse it. I understand that. But it's also one of those things where you can't say that you're a diehard Florida State fan, a diehard North Carolina fan, diehard Maryland fan. Those are my three teams. I'm diehard with that. Okay, well, if who you're going to root for in football? You can't root for all three of them. You probably know your team, but after it's all said and done, who is your team in college football? Is it Florida State? Is it North Carolina? Is it Maryland? And out of those three teams, I hope Trevin's college football team is FSU. I know that for a fact. I know North Carolina is his team in college basketball. He does follow the other teams as his second-tier casual fan method like I do with Duke and Notre Dame as well. And it's a little bit harder now that Notre Dame is in the ACC for everything but college football. I'll talk about that next couple episodes or whatnot because I have a strong opinion about that. Those are the big three things when it comes to casual fans and diehard fans. I want to hear from y'all about that because that's a big topic that I think is really interesting. Everybody have different opinions about it. For that sake, please follow me on social media. Follow me on Instagram, LML Podcast 84, Twitter, LML Podcast 1984. Send me a private message on Twitter. Send me an email, LML Podcast 1984@gmail.com. If you want to share your thoughts and opinions about that, I always want to hear sports fans in general about that, casual fans versus diehard fans. Let's go ahead and talk about a few top storylines going into the 2024 college football season. I only have a few to talk about. I'm going to be talking a lot more as next couple episodes go on as I preview teams, I preview conferences and whatnot. At least three basic ones here. The first one I really want to talk about is kind of a weird one, but I found it intriguing. Everyone knows that the EA Sports college football game is out after a big hiatus for the game not to be out in stores because of all the Ed O'Bannon bullshit and all this going on and whatnot. Ed O'Bannon was a horrible basketball player, by the way, UCLA, and didn't do shit in the pros. But besides the point, I strongly think that this game will make a bigger impact this year in college football than anything. Most of my listeners are kind of like, Kurt, what the hell are you talking about? Will the excitement of the game itself bring in newer fans to start watching college football? I think it will. Those fans are going to be watching more and more college football within the next few years. So I think it's going to be a huge success. The game itself has already been a huge success as well. And I played it numerous times already and the game's phenomenal. All right. I'm one of those guys that don't have a PS5. I have several friends that have PS5. Like I mentioned, I played the game and it's just phenomenal. So I just think that's an interesting concept to see the newer generation trying to be more involved in college football and more interested in the sport of college football. So only time will tell, but I think it's in the right direction for the new generation of fans. How the 12-team college football playoff will affect this year and years to come. I think the 12-team college football playoff is amazing. A little bit of backstory. I did do a project probably when I was 5th or 6th grade, I believe, that I came up with a concept, and this was way before anyone thought about a college football playoff, all right? So I'm not going to pat myself on the back, which I am right now, but I thought of the idea long before the NCAA figured this out, all right? The 12-team playoff is going to be phenomenal for college football this year. I think it's going to be good for the Power Fives, obviously. I think it's a good opportunity for the mid-major teams to prove themselves that they could get into it, and I know everyone's going to say, well, Kurt, you're a Notre Dame fan, and Notre Dame's, you know, the problem with any yada 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 about getting in, and they're independent, they need to join a conference. Trust me, I'll talk about that in about another week or so when I preview Notre Dame. I'm going to have a full show on Notre Dame and hopefully have some guests on as well with that. So I know it's a full episode and people need to get off my ass to have a full episode of my team, but it's my show. I can do whatever the hell I want. I think this is going to be really good. There's a lot of talks about it moving to 14 teams in a few years. I think that's way too much. I think 12 is good. 8 would have been just fine with me. Let's just see how it works for 5 or 6 years before we tweak it up to 14. To say that this 12-team playoff is going to be around for one season and they're going to move it up to 14 in the following year is ridiculous, all right? Let's see what happens with it first before we increase it by numbers, all right? By the time I leave this world, it's going to be a 32 team or even a 64, just like the NCAA basketball and March Madness tournament, and that's going to be ridiculous, guys. That's not going to happen. 32 is not going to happen. 16 might see that, but I would probably prefer to just keep it at 12. Nick Saban retiring, and I know a lot of people are talking about this. I think this is going to be more of an impact on college football this year than most people believe. Nick Saban, 17 years at Alabama, 201 victories with 29 losses. In the SEC, 117 wins and 18 losses. Both of those are 87% winning percentage. That's just unbelievable, all right, guys? He's a GOAT. He's one of the GOATs when it comes to college football head coaches of all time. Six national championships in those 17 years. He's a phenomenal coach, and I know Alabama fans are going to get on to me about this as well. I think they're going to take a step back this year. When you lose one of the best, if not the best, college football head coaches of all time, you're going to take a step back. Kalen DeBoer, who came over from Washington, and granted, 2 years, Washington, 25-3 in two seasons, phenomenal. Newsflash, this is not the Pac-12. This is the SEC, all right? He's going to win his games. He's a phenomenal coach. He has recruited well. He has coached a lot of good players at Washington and before at Fresno State and before when he was coaching Division I, AA, or AAA, or whatever it was. As much as it pains me to say this, SEC and the Big Ten are the two biggest conferences in college football right now. There's no ifs or buts about it. You can't disagree with that comment. Do I think that Alabama's going to take a step back? Absolutely. Do I think that it'll be 3 or 4 years before we see Alabama back into the national championship contention? Yes, I do. Do I think that they're already a guarantee to make the college football playoffs? Some might think so. Might say yes, Alabama will still be in it. I'm not going to say anything right now about that. I'll say that for in the next week when I preview and I project my first ever 12-team college football playoff for this upcoming football season. Coming up next, I am going to start that process with talking about my five surprise teams coming into the college football season of 2024. You are listening to the Loudmouth Leprechaun podcast on podbean.com.
The day that I lost my leg in Iraq, I remember just waking up in the truck, and then my buddy drugged me to the Bravo truck. They didn't know if I was going to make it or not.
The need for Wounded Warrior Project continues. Your support is even more important now because the greatest casualty is being forgotten.
I was in a hospital bed in a very, very dark place, and a gentleman came in from Wounded Warrior Project and he gave me a promise. That promise was, no matter what, Wounded Warrior Project will be here for you. And in almost 20 years, Wounded Warrior Project has not gone back on that promise.
Your gift of just $19 a month will provide free programs and services that make life-changing differences for warriors and their families.
I was really angry. I felt like I failed because not only I got hurt, I let the guys in my truck get hurt. And it took me a while to come to terms with that. And being able to just talk about the feelings that I have, it literally saved my life after I got out.
Please. Call or go online with your gift of $19 a month, and we'll send you this Wounded Warrior Project blanket as a reminder of the difference your gifts are making.
Wounded Warrior Project has made him a better spouse, a better dad. I'm very proud of Brian through each of these chapters. Wounded Warrior Project is very important to Brian and to our life.
I try to live for more than myself, and I can do that because of the folks that have donated to Wounded Warrior Project. And so, thank you.
Please, give a little to those who gave so much for us.
Welcome back, listeners, to the inaugural episode of the Loudmouth Leprechaun podcast right here on podbean.com. Like I mentioned before the commercial break, I am officially going to start my 2024-25 college football preview right now, talking about surprise teams, talking about conferences, talking about all kinds of stuff, getting you ready for the upcoming college football season. It's going to be unbelievable. With that being said, let me go ahead and talk about my surprise teams for the upcoming college football season. Couple rules when I was determining these surprise teams. The two rules were teams cannot be in the preseason AP top 25, and I had to pick five teams, one in the SEC, one in the ACC, one in the Big Ten, one in the Big 12, and a mid-major to watch out for. If you want to send me your thoughts on your surprise teams for the upcoming college football season, please send me email at lmlpodcast1984@gmail.com. Also, send me a private message on Twitter, lmlpodcast1984. First one I'm going to talk about, since we're in SEC country, that team that has struggled the last few years, team that I respect, and I know the people here in Georgia don't like them, or better yet, dislike them, and that's the Florida Gators. Last year, their record was 5-7. They returned some good players. They added some transfers. One of them I'm going to talk about here in a second, which I'm not a big fan of. A few positives that the Florida Gators have going for them. First one is they have senior running back Montrell Johnson, who rushed for 800 yards rushing last year and 5 touchdowns. I think he's going to increase both of those numbers this year with over 1,000 yards rushing and 10 touchdowns. He's a phenomenal player, very explosive, so I think he's going to be a very good player for the Florida Gators this season. Also, their offensive line experience is unbelievable. They have 80 career starts on that offensive line. Think about that for a second. 12, 13 games a year, 80 career starts with that offensive line unit. That's a veteran offensive line. Their other thing is their defensive ends are very underrated, in my opinion. Tyreek Sapp, 6'3", 271 pounds, and TJ Searcy, 6'5", 255. Both of these guys are unbelievable talent, long arms, get to the quarterback. I expect big things from both of these defensive ends this year. Couple negatives real quick for the Florida Gators moving forward. They have another wash-up Wisconsin transfer quarterback, and I should know something about Wisconsin quarterback transfers because Notre Dame had one in Jack Cohn. Years ago, a lot of Notre Dame fans appreciate and were grateful for his success at Notre Dame. Me, I could care less. I didn't think he did quite as well as he thought that he might do, but they have a Wisconsin transfer coming in by the name of Graham Mertz. 20 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, and 73% passing completion last year. Numbers look all right. He was in the Big Ten last year. I don't think he's that type of quarterback that the SEC preferably likes. His biggest win last year was Nebraska. He can't win the big games. Even in the Big Ten, he could not win big games. And now you're telling me that when he comes into the SEC with all those hard-hitting teams that he's going to win those big games? I doubt it, but he could give at least one or two of those games could potentially go Florida's way. Big games in 2024 for the Florida Gators. They start the season against Miami at home. They're at Tennessee, LSU at home, Florida in Jacksonville, and you could call that a home game like every year for Florida, at Texas, at FSU, and be home against Mississippi. At best, they could be 5-7. I think that they could win two of those games. I think they're going to beat Miami at the beginning of the year because Miami tends to not do well at all in season openers, and I think they could either beat Tennessee at Tennessee, or I think they could, depending on how they do, I think they could be Florida State at the end of the year. So I'm projecting them to be 7-5. And not all these teams are going to be in contention to make the college football playoff this year, but I think they're just going to be improving. A couple other negatives that I think for Florida coming into this upcoming season, they only have one return starter in the defensive backfield. One interception returns from last year's team. Think about that for a second. One interception returning from last year's team. That tells me their defensive backfield is weak, and that means that quarterbacks in the SEC, there's a lot of pass-first quarterbacks in the SEC, and I think they're going to have field day with this defense for the Florida Gators as well. I think their defense is really going to struggle as well. I think their offense is going to be pretty solid, especially with a veteran offensive line, a good running back, and Montrell Johnson, who I mentioned just a few minutes ago. They haven't had a winning season under Bill Napper in the last three seasons. Total record of 17-21, that's bad, especially in the SEC. Is he going to be on the hot seat with a 6-6 record in 2024? I think so. I think with a 6-6 or below record, I think he's gone in Gainesville. I think that the Florida alum and the Florida fans are sick and tired of being subpar in the SEC the last few years. And I think for Coach Napper to continue at Florida, I think they need to win 7 this year, 7 or even 8. Potentially, I think Florida could be really good. I just think they have questions not only on their defense, but I think their quarterback transfer from Wisconsin was kind of a last second thing as well. So I don't think he's as good as most people think he is. Going on to my team in the Big Ten, who I think is going to be a surprise team. And that's the Nebraska Cornhuskers, all right? Last year, they were 5-7. Offensively, they have two impactful wide receiver transfers. Jamal Banks, the 6'4 receiver to transfer in from Wake Forest, and 6'3 transfer from Texas, Isaiah Nayar. Both of these guys are very talented, big, strong. Looking forward to seeing these two in the red and white this year. They have a very underrated defensive line led by Jamar Butler and Nash Hasmacher. 12 sacks last year for both of them. They have a favorable schedule. We all know how Nebraska is, all right? They get overhyped, they lose the first game or two, and everybody forgets about them. But this schedule this year really favors them. I mean, they don't play Michigan, they don't play Penn State, or they don't play Oregon. Those are the top three teams in the Big Ten. They should be favorable in their first 7 games. If they get their foot out of their ass and actually play, I think they can win all 7 of their first games and win one more. They'll finish the season 8-4. Their last winning season was 2016, all right? They've had a 54% winning percentage, 28-52 since 2016. I like Nebraska, but this is not the Nebraska of the late 90s, all right? Tommy Frazier, Lawrence Phillips, all those guys were unbelievable, but Nebraska has been subpar the last 2 decades, all right? Their quarterback history since 2000 has been horrible and weak as hell. Name me their last great quarterback that they had. That was 2000, and that was Eric Crouch. I don't want to hear the Martinez brothers, Taylor and Adrian Martinez, were good, but for those guys, suck balls, all right? Literally, suck balls. Last one, I teased it earlier. They have a freshman quarterback by the name of Dylan Raiola. I think he's a little overhyped and lack of loyalty to program. His father was a second round draft pick in 2001 by the Detroit Lions. Phenomenal player. He committed in 2022 to play at Ohio State. In 2023, he decommitted to Ohio State and then committed to UGA. And then he flipped from UGA to Nebraska. Now, I'm not the first one because this guy's a young kid, has some potential. If he gets the starting job at Nebraska, I think he's going to be a wash-up has-been. I really, truly do, and it's sad because I think he has all the talent in the world to be very good. His personality and his cockiness will get the better of him, and by year 2 at Nebraska, if he stays around, you won't hear anything about him. So it's kind of disappointing, but make me eat my crow. Going on to the ACC, my surprise team in the ACC this year is the Virginia Tech Hokies. Last year, they were 6-6. They returned 21 return starters. A lot of experience. 3 losses by 7 points or less last season. So put that in perspective real quick. If they won those 3 games, they would have been 9-3 last year. They can't finish games, but more on that here in a second. Junior quarterback Kayron Drones, hands down, the best quarterback in the ACC this year. I don't care what you say about Clemson's quarterback. I don't care what you say about DJ, whatever his name is at Florida State. He was a wash-up has-been at Clemson. He was a wash-up has-been at Oregon State. Now that DJ guy's going to be at Florida State, he's going to be a wash-up has-been there. I think Kayron Drones is the best quarterback in the ACC this year. Last year, he had 800-plus rushing yards, 2,100 passing yards, 22 total touchdowns, and 3 interceptions. I think this year, he's going to be over 3,500 total yards, 28 touchdowns, and 5 interceptions this year. I think this guy could be a dark horse when it comes to ACC Player of the Year. Well, I like his game. He's a dual threat quarterback. Their defensive line is the best in the ACC as well. The senior Cole Nelson, 4.5 sacks last year. Senior Antoine Powell Ryland, 9.5 sacks last year. And they also got 2 transfers from Duke and Oklahoma that played on their defensive line last year. Oklahoma's defensive line was solid. Duke's was pretty solid last year as well. So their defensive line is going to be really, really good and very underrated. underrated, in my opinion. So, and of course, they have no FSU on the schedule this year, which is a huge plus. The only negative that I have about Virginia Tech, which is a huge one, is their bad luck at home since 2020. And everyone knows that Lane Stadium gets hyped up, Enter Sandman at the beginning of the game. I remember Notre Dame going there a few years ago. I was watching the game at my parents' house. Enter Sandman came on, Metallica, one of my favorite rock bands of all time. And I'm like, holy shit, we're going to get our ass handed to us. Long and behold, we whoop their ass. 13 wins and 11 losses at home since 2020. They averaged 10 points per game in those losses. So once again, when I go up and set 3 losses by 7 points or less last season, they need to learn how to finish games. And I always like Virginia Tech more than a lot of other ACC schools. I think Virginia Tech and Duke are my top two when it comes to college footballs that I tend to root for more than all the others. But I think Virginia Tech, with their schedule and the way that I strongly believe that their offense is going to be this year, and their defensive line, and not playing Florida State, I think they can go 9-3 this year. I think this team is really, really solid. Going on to my Big 12 surprise for the upcoming 2024 college football season, and that's the Central Florida Knights. Last year, their record was 6-6. The big thing on their offense is the impact of quarterback transfer KJ Jefferson. And you SEC fans out there know that KJ Jefferson was the quarterback at Arkansas. He transferred into Central Florida for this upcoming season. He reminds me so much of former Auburn quarterback Cam Newton. A dual threat quarterback, can run, long arms, very fast, can do a lot of damage, especially in the Big 12, which outside of Utah this year, who else is going to have that next tier team that's going to make an impact? He has 38 career starts too. He's a veteran. He has experience. He's going to be really good. I think this is the perfect situation for him. I think he's going to shine. I'm not saying that he didn't have a good career at Arkansas, but I think he's going to have even a better career, and his NFL draft stock is going to go through the roof this year. I think he's going to have a breakout year playing in the Big 12. They also have some good offensive weapons and senior running back RJ Harvin, who had 1,400 plus rushing yards last year and 16 touchdowns. I think he's going to have over 1,600 rushing yards this year and 20 touchdowns. I think he's very underrated. I think he's a potential Big 12 Player of the Year candidate. They also have senior wide receiver Kobe Hudson, 900 yards last year receiving and 8 touchdowns. You know, he's going to be another very important piece to the Central Florida offense that they are expecting, especially behind the transfer KJ Jefferson at quarterback. Their best defensive player returning are nose tackle Lee Hunter, 69 tackles, 3 sacks, and defensive end Malachi Lawrence Jr., 7.5 sacks. Their defense is very, very young, but these two guys are going to help out that defense so much. They have solid linebackers too, so really looking forward to seeing them play. This is a stat that drives me insane. And talking about Virginia Tech finishing games, listen to this stat. 5 straight games last year for Central Florida when their defense gave up 40.3 points per game. They need to finish games, all right? Their defense lack. I don't know if it's depth issues. I don't know if their defense aren't as well conditioned as some teams, but they need to learn how to finish games. 3 games last year, they lost by an average of 1 point. So last year, they were 6-6. Once again, they could have been 9-3 last year if they just won those 3 games. With that being said, I think this team's really, really good. I think this team could be a surprise in the Big 12 this year, potentially could finish either 2nd or 3rd this year in the Big 12. So I'm projecting 9-3 record for the Central Florida Knights. My last team, my mid-major team, and this is a long shot, ladies and gentlemen. All right, but the only reason I picked them was because I like their head coach. I respect the head coach of this program, and it's the UAB Blazers. Last year, 4-8. They have a few players coming back that are very good. Senior quarterback Jacob Zuno, 3,100 passing yards, 20 touchdowns. Really good player, a little bit under the radar type of quarterback as well. I think he's going to have a good year. Talented offensive weapons and wide receiver Amari Thomas and running back Isaiah Jacobs. Isaiah Jacobs is the younger brother of current Green Bay Packer running back Josh Jacobs. Both need to have great years for this team to be successful. Their depth at wideout and running backs aren't as impressive. They need to stay healthy. They need to both have good years. They need to be on the same page as quarterback Jacob Zeno as well. Their offensive line is not as good either because they're a little bit undersized. Defensive end Desmond Little Jr., 5.5 sacks last year. Very good under the radar defensive end as well in the country. They are coached by former 14-year veteran of the NFL, Trent Dilfer, and he's in his 2nd year as their head head coach. Trent Dilfer has won 2 state titles with the 4th best high school football program in Tennessee at Lipscomb Academy. He was a phenomenal player. He won a Super Bowl. He was a player at Fresno State for a few years. This guy knows how to coach. I know he was an analyst for a long time. He's getting into coaching. I think that this is going to be a breakout year for him. Like I just mentioned, they have a very undersized offensive line. They need to bulk up and protect the quarterback. They gave up 30-plus sacks last year, so their offensive line is going to be the problem. If their offensive line bulks up and improves, this offense is going to be really, really good if everybody stays healthy. If they don't stay healthy, then it's going to be a long season for the UAB Blazers. With that being said, their schedule is favorable. I strongly think that they're going to finish 7-5, and I think they're going to increase their win total by 3, and I think they're going to get it into a bowl game come December. Coming up next, I'm going to wrap up the show with my favorite segment of every episode, the pissant of the week. Boy, do I have 2 pissants that I really want to talk about. One in the sports industry, one professional industry as well. You are listening to the Loudmouth Leprechaun podcast on podbean.com.
Your adoption, but there are some things you need to know. She's in Siberia, and she was born with a rare condition. Her legs will need to be amputated. I know this is difficult to hear. Her life, it won't be easy.
But it'll be amazing. I can't wait to meet her.
We believe there is hope and strength in all of us. Toyota, proud partner of Team USA.
Welcome back to the Loudmouth Leprechaun podcast right here on podbean.com. Just like I did in episode 0 last week, my last segment every episode is called the Piss Ants of the Week. I usually only do one, but I have 2 today. One that's sports related, one that's just your everyday professional life situations. Let me go ahead and start talking about the first one. Fox News correspondent Tommy Lahren, who's a Republican who I respect, who has a lot of good opinions. I don't agree with everything she says, but I agree with about 80% of what she says. She did a recent interview. She said, and I quote, "Democrats are not afraid to express their opinion and beliefs in public spaces, but Republicans are. As a born conservative myself," I agree with her. I think that Democrats are more open about their thoughts and opinions on what's going on in the world than Republicans are. I think Republicans are safe. Yes, they call us weird. We can call them weird as well, because trust me, Democrats are weird regardless. My whole thing is that Republicans as a whole don't need to be afraid about speaking their mind. I know in the workforce, 3 main things that you don't talk about in the workforce are gender preferences, religion, and politics. I think that's absolutely bullshit. Let me give you an example. I'm a sports fan. If everybody in the state of Georgia are Georgia Bulldog fans, if everyone in the state of Minnesota were Golden Gophers fans, that state, when it comes to college football, would be boring. Thank God we don't live in a world where we have that. Everybody has different teams, different opinions about their teams or their sports that they enjoy watching. And we talk to coworkers, we talk to classmates, we talk to family and friends about those thoughts and opinions. Why in the fuck can we not talk about politics in the workforce? All right, this is bullshit. I cannot understand the logic behind this. Unless me and a coworker are getting blows about politics, him being a Democrat, me being a Republican, that's one thing. But if we can talk peacefully and understand one person's point of view and just have a friendly discussion about it, then I don't see the concern of us being able to discuss that. And it drives me insane. Everyone says, oh, well, you can get fired by talking politics in a workplace. Yeah, and it happened to me. I'm not going to get into detail on which company that was. You know exactly who it was. And they gave me the bullshit about, well, we're going in another management direction, or we're doing this, or we're doing this. No, some moron in the workplace called me out because I was talking politics. You don't have to agree with every single fucking thing that I say as being a conservative. Plus, don't be a whining bitch and be a bunch of junior high kids that go whine and cry to their bosses or their principal about me disagreeing with you on something. I think that's bullshit, alright? With that being said, I know who the company is. I know the individuals that we're talking about. One individual that I used to work with respected my ability to talk politics with him. Me and him never saw eye to eye on a lot of things politics, but we agreed with it. And we didn't come to blows. And this guy is the next generation of voters. He was so willing to listen to my point of view as well as me listen to his point of view. Yes, we disagree on stuff, but we were friends, just like in sports. Me and him are both sports fans. Do I agree with him saying LeBron James is better than Michael Jordan? No, but I can listen to him without going to blows with him. That's the whole logic behind talking politics in the workforce. I don't care if it's politics. I don't care if it's sports. I don't care if it's entertainment. I don't care if it's religion. As long as you can have a peaceful discussion about it and not go to blows with one another in the workplace, it should be wide open. If you have two immature pricks that are about to go to blows over one's a Republican, one's a Democrat, okay, then that's when management needs to step in, all right? In the case that I got let go of my job because of talking politics, that individual that kind of was a whining bitch and went to go tell management should have came up to me and saying, I understand that you're passionate about the upcoming election, but there has been some concerns about what you talk about. Would I have agreed with it? No. Let's be honest, but I would have understood and I would have calmed down a little bit about who I would talk to in certain situations, especially in politics. So everybody that I ever talked to, family especially, they have said, don't talk politics, don't talk this, don't talk this. I never gave a damn about politics until I became a father and became a husband and worried about what me and my wife and my little girl's going to go through in the next 4 years. One of my other coworkers, and he's a Democrat and I'm a Republican as well, he made the idiotic comment and he goes, well, all of us are immigrants. Okay, I understand that logic, but it's also one of those things where if you have a young kid, let's say you have an 8-9-year-old girl, and with all these illegal immigrants coming in to this country, and God forbid something happens to one of them, how could you sleep at night? How could you sleep knowing that your little one just got raped by these illegal aliens? And that's something I don't understand about Democrats as well. And I don't want to get into a whole political discussion here. I'm going to say that for another show. But people need to fucking wake up. This is bullshit. Talking politics in the workforce should be allowed because it makes the country a hell of a lot better, a lot more open. People get butthurt by it, and it drives me insane. They need to fucking stand up and bulk up and discuss shit like this. That's the only way this country's going to get better, if people open up and talk about the issues that are bothering them the most. All of you workers out there, have some balls and talk about whatever the fuck you want to when you're in the workplace, alright? If you go up to a coworker and start talking politics, that coworker can say, look, I don't want to talk politics at work. Okay, fine. Leave it as is and go talk to either somebody else about politics and or change the subject with that coworker to sports or entertainment or whatnot and just have a friendly discussion about that. Going on to my next thing, I'm not going to get into full detail about this. You can do your own research. This NFL new kickoff rules is a joke. I understand the logic. I understand that they don't want to have a lot more touchbacks or they don't want to have more concussions. But let me give you guys my rules that I would do for this new kickoff coming into play this year for the NFL, all right? First one is, let it be a free ball when it gets into the landing zone. If it touches into the landing zone, ball's free. If the kickoff returner muffs the kickoff, defense gets the ball, it's a turnover. As soon as he touches the ball, someone can knock the crap out of him. That's my opinion about that. If a kicker kicks it and it goes into the back of the end zone, the receiving team gets it at midfield. I think this would be a great rule, and it would force kickers not to kick it just because they don't want to return. I think that would be a great rule, and I think make it so much more entertaining for the game to start at midfield. If the returner kneels into the end zone with the ball or just shoves the ball out of bounds, then the receiving team must start their possession at their own 5-yard line. I think this is huge because ball goes into the end zone and you kneel it. I think that's a pussy way to do it. If you push the ball, that's a pussy way to do it. If you do one of those, you can do it, but you're going to get hugely penalized and have the ball back at your own 5-yard line, make you go 95 yards for the touchdown, basically. I think that would be a fun rule to have. If the kicker kicks it and it lands in bounds and then goes out of bounds, then the receiving team gets it at their own 40. And that's self-explanatory, all right? It's been like that for the last year or two, so, and especially in the NFL and in college. So those are my rules. I think it could be entertaining. I think it's bullshit. I think that these rules are made for pussies, and it's the whole thing about manning up, doing that thing. So those are my piss ants of the week. I appreciate everyone tuning in to this first official inaugural episode of the Loudmouth Leprechaun Podcast. Go ahead and follow me on social media, LML Podcast 1984 on Twitter, LML Podcast 84 on Instagram. Send me your questions, concerns, comments at lmlpodcast1984@gmail.com. I will be back Friday to preview the SEC and the ACC as well. Hopefully I'm going to have someone on to talk about that as well. I will see you guys Friday. And remember, this loudmouth speaks the truth, and you know it.